Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Jennifer Law, your host, joined by Cicely Marie, my co-host and producer, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.
Welcome to Venus Rising, and I'm really excited about our guest with us today. Today's guest is Tayana Ben-Ami. And Tayana is the executive director of the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, which is based in New York City. However, it's a very international organization. She also has her law degree by way of background from New York University, NYU, and was a founding member of Equality Now, where she served for 10 years as the executive director of that organization. But most of her career, she spent working to promote and protect the human rights of women and girls around the world. And Tayana literally travels the world all the time. I think she's one busy woman with probably a lot of miles logged. Anyway, Tayana, welcome to Venus Rising. It's great to finally be able to talk with you.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer. It's really an honor to be here.
Yeah, well, it's my honor as well. But I think first, I would just like you to tell our listeners about the work that you do with the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women. And, you know, what are kind of your big focuses? And maybe if you could just give us a perspective of the landscape. How are things going for women and girls in the world today?
Well, that is a loaded question. As you mentioned, I have been doing this work for close to 30 years. And I can tell you that although, yes, we have made progress in many instances, policy-wise, legally, I think we are in a culture, in a global culture that is so disparaging and deprecating of women and girls as full human beings that I can tell you I've never seen things as bad as they are today, especially in my field. I'm not talking about other fields. Like there definitely have been tremendous strides, whether it's women's political representation or we're moving toward, you know, pay equality inch by inch. But my daily work is legal advocacy, making sure that governments understand how sex trafficking works, what types of laws that need to be in place to prevent it, how to understand the systems of prostitution and commercial sexual exploitation. And then also more broadly, like, how do you address, prevent, suppress the exploitation of women in all its forms in the sex trade and, of course, in commercial reproductive surrogacy, topic of this podcast. So from that end, we are really, really challenged in getting the public to understand that money is not consent. And also one cannot consent to one's own exploitation under international law. And so, yeah, so some days you feel very, very hopeful because what we have now is a growing global movement of survivors of sexual violence, survivors of prostitution, survivors of pornography, who are speaking up and who I think are the wave of the future and will definitely help us in forging a path toward justice and equality for women and girls who are exploited. But again, I think if you look at the culture of the media, social media, and just this knee-jerk, neoliberal, anything-goes type of attitude that is really jeopardizing women's and girls' rights in a very profound way.
Just listening to you, I'm thinking, wow, I need something to be hopeful about. I mean, I'm in the backyard of the Silicon Valley, which is terribly libertarian. Which is more of, you know, anything goes, and as long as consenting adults agree, you know, everything is fine. And it's easy to think, you know, how much we talk about progressivism and being progressive and how regressive a lot of this stuff is for women. It's, oh, my goodness. Anyway, I'm still remembering.
We had this hashtag actually during, because, you know, I live in New York. I'm a New Yorker. Past legislative session was particularly daunting because there were two bills, one the Child Parent Security Act, the misnamed legalization of of commercial reproductive surrogacy, and also a bill that fully decriminalized the sex trade. So we had this hashtag, regressive, not progressive, because it's easy to slap any old name on, you know, policies or laws or attitudes that actually fail to analyze the implications on human beings. So I think it is very important for, and, you know, we, of course, we're in this human rights movement and this women's rights movement because we want to progress toward equality and justice. So we are the ones who are progressive. Anyone who wants to commodify women for the profit of others, for, you know, multi-billion dollar industries, including the reproductive technology industries and the sex trade, is the most regressive framework that really destroys the dignity and the humanity of 3.8 billion people on the planet who are women and girls.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of got thrown into your world, if you will, the work that you do through my work in the whole area of exploitation of women's reproductive bodies through, you know, surrogacy and egg donation. And I've learned so much from, like, Melissa Farley and Julie Bindle, Kajsa Ekman in Sweden, you know, so it's been really robust. But on the other hand, I still remember that really cold winter day, snowy day, when we actually first met in your offices in New York, feeling like the weight of my work was coming crashing down on your lap, you know, talking about this bill in New York, this Child Parent Security Act, and you kind of feeling like, oh my, now I have to add one more thing to my plate, another area where women are being exploited and abused. I mean, did you feel that way as well because of, you know, your passion and your interest in protecting women, that here was one more new field, if you will, that's a whole nother way that women are now being exploited?
Yeah, I remember that evening very well. And what you describe is exactly what I felt. We're a tiny organization. We don't generally work on, you know, local issues, although obviously if there are laws in New York, we worked very closely to pass the 2007 New York State Human Trafficking Act. But yes, it was, you know, commercial surrogacy is such a complex, vast area. And of course, intuitively, from a policy perspective, we were always in opposition to any type of commercial surrogacy as really a manifestation of the ultimate commodification and denigration of women and their bodies. But it's true that when I was thinking about my bandwidth or lack thereof to really add such an enormous field to my very long global list of urgent matters, it did feel overwhelming. Having said that, so I resisted for a very long time to be engaged in this field because it is a full-time job if you want to give it the respect it's owed, and also the fight that needs to be invested to combat these dark forces. But then I read a letter written by Dorchen Lightholt that was subsequently signed by 100+ women leaders in New York State, from Gloria Steinem to Eve Ensler, Yasmin Hassan from Equality Now, and physicians and professors, and Bella Abzug's daughter, Liz Abzug, and her institute. And that really changed everything for me because it just crystallized the urgency of the matter, and also that New York was really... we were at 2 seconds of you know, from the end of the legislative session, not knowing whether the bill would pass or not. So it was a very, very tense time. The stakes were extremely high, and I feel very proud that I was a member of this extraordinary coalition of women. And we cannot forget the outstanding leadership of the New York State Assembly women who fought tooth and nail and who stood up to Governor Cuomo and to lobbyists and others in saying New York cannot legalize harm. We cannot jeopardize the lives and health and bodies of the most vulnerable women in New York State and elsewhere for third-party commercial profits.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, you know, being in California and watching what you all were doing and able to do with such limited resources and knowing how everybody had other full-time jobs and how, talk about a moment of hopefulness, you know, to feel like, wow, we might have a test case for how a model, you know, coalition can come together quickly in a state such as New York. I mean, I've been fighting this beast of commercial surrogacy for a decade, and I want to bang my head on, you know, my desk every time I read another media story reporting about how wonderful and excellent and great it is that women are helping other people have babies and making money and this great. And oh, by the way, it's only the Catholic Church that opposes this. And I'm not a Catholic. I don't believe you are a Catholic. And I just want to scream at, you know, that there's many people that oppose this. So I watched you guys and went, we have a shot at it, and you guys did it.
It was not easy. And again, I truly bow and honor to the older assemblywomen. We have to say that, because a lot of the, with a few exceptions, but a lot of the younger assemblywomen, especially this last crop of so-called progressive candidates, just could not wrap their brains around the issues. So it's, and including women of color, like I am of Haitian descent, and I was, apart from one Haitian assemblywoman, Michaëlle Solage, I believe they all voted in favor of the Child Parent Security Act. And I was having these conversations with one assemblywoman in particular, who is of Haitian descent, and I was with one of my colleagues who's also African American, and we were trying to get her to see this as a direct legacy of slavery, that on the plantations, the fetuses and the babies of the African diaspora did not belong to them. They belonged to the plantation owner. They were his property. He could do what he wanted with this baby or this fetus or the woman who was carrying the fetus. And that this was not any different, that for 30,000 or 40,000 or whatever paltry amount that is given to these women who are extremely vulnerable. And also people can't, they don't have, they don't sit down and start thinking and looking at what picture are we looking at? We're looking at a rare 0.1% of the population who have at least $100,000 in disposable income to go rent someone's womb and go purchase another woman's organ, her eggs, to produce their progeny. And who are going to be these women, right? So the first thing that we understand in the field of trafficking, and this is, commercial surrogacy is reproductive trafficking, or certainly lends itself to very, very high risk of reproductive trafficking, is that you have abuse of power and you have abuse of vulnerability. And so even the contract of having, you know, very wealthy, affluent people purchasing women who are economically vulnerable, who probably face or have faced other acute vulnerabilities, is a violation of human rights. And you see the disparity, the inequality, whether it's economic and certainly racial. And so it was very, very, it still is very difficult for me to look at a legislator in his or her eyes. And I mean, clearly they have enough brains to have been elected and to legislate for their state, and yet they could not make these connections. And I'm not being facetious when I say that I don't understand why those brain synapses just don't connect.
Yeah, and you guys had even sort of a more precarious situation in that you were going against legislators in New York that had been long-time allies with you on other issues, you know, violence against women and trafficking and the issue of prostitution. And here they weren't with you on this issue. And so you had a lot of political capital, if you will, to maybe lose.
Well, the capital for us that matters, for me anyway, is vulnerable women and girls. The rest, I think, in many areas in which we work and when we feel defeated or when we have great challenges, you follow the money. You know, unfortunately, we live in a society where money speaks sometimes louder than anything else. And so I think a lot of this resistance, a lot of it's either not understanding how money, power, and control work, or it's that you are a direct beneficiary of a third party exploiter who has incredible financial interest in making these types of violations happen.
Now, this piece of legislation is going to come back, right?
Unfortunately, yes, with a vengeance, probably.
What's the plan?
Well, we are already getting news from Albany that the industry is gearing up. They are. They have hired lobbyists. They have strategies to target specific legislators, whether it's in the Senate or the Assembly. The Child Parent Security Act passed the New York State Senate, by the way, and except for the very brave and rousing speech by Senator Liz Krueger, who opposed it on the floor just brilliantly and courageously. I believe most of the senators just either didn't know enough about it or just signed on because the sponsor is a friendly senator that people wanted to please. I don't know. But it is very daunting when we hear that they will come back with enormous force and resources, which we don't have, nor do we have access to these resources. We have to believe that the voices of the women's movement matters. I mean, it's we're in a democracy, right? So we have to believe that sometimes the wheels of the democratic process will work. And so I think we will just revert to our classic grassroots activism, education. We're hoping that this time we can have hearings with survivors of commercial surrogacy and even egg donation, even though egg donation is legal in the U.S., I mean, in New York. You know, one of my secret dreams is that the laws are overturned one day once we have enough information about, you know, the lifelong harms and devastation that egg donation, and you're much more of an expert on the consequences, medical and psychological, of egg donation than I am. You know what, we were trying to tell the legislators, and I think this is something that we will continue doing starting in January 2020 when the legislative session starts again, is that you as the state have a responsibility to protect the most vulnerable. Your responsibility is not to violate human rights for the purpose of third-party exploitative industries, you know? And the best way to do that is for people to hear testimonies of survivors.
Right. You know, and I'm working with Lynn, I hope I say her name right, Savarese?
Yes, yes, Lynn Savarese.
Yeah, who did the New Abolitions campaign. And she and I will be traveling in a few weeks, you know, across the United States to take pictures of survivors, if you will, of surrogacy and egg harvesting. But for me, it's such an educational gap. Most people just think, oh, you're helping somebody have a baby. That's a good, wonderful thing. And without any really understanding of this industry, this multi-billion dollar industry that's profiting off of, you know, women's bodies and vulnerable women. And again, like you say, it's the wealthy that can buy and it's the poor or the lower income that sell or rent.
Yes. And then the other component, and we were criticized for this. People were saying how hyperbolic we were and how we exaggerated. But if you increase the demand, and this is like any market, right, for any economic market, you have the equations of supply, demand, and an incentive for profit. So any state that legalizes commercial surrogacy, and especially New York as a major, you know, we're talking about a state that includes New York City, you know, one of the major hubs in the world. And this bill, as you know, had very, very limited, if any, protection for the women. So no background checks on the so-called intended parents. There was only a 90-day residency requirement. So that would mean in practice that anyone, clearly a well-intended parent to a pedophile, to a sex trafficker, to a convicted felon, could come and hire any woman from anywhere around the world, not just from New York, but could really ship any woman anywhere to be impregnated for their purposes. And so that is reproductive trafficking again. And people couldn't really make the connections, because very often we understand what we see, and this is not something that is in plain sight, right? So that was also an educational component to our advocacy that we had to, there are enough anecdotes around this concept of reproductive trafficking. You go to the Ukraine and it's literally a baby farm. As you know, children are abandoned by their so-called intended parents, if for whatever reason, if they change their mind, if the child has medical issues, or, you know, these are human beings we're talking about. The sale of children is against the law. It's against international law. It's against human rights principles. And so it's sometimes confusing for us to see that these connections aren't made, and that there's people just brush over it and just say, no, it doesn't happen. You're exaggerating, when, you know, we haven't heard yet from the people to whom it has happened and the suffering that it causes.
Right. And, you know, the women that I do work with and hear from regularly, you know, they're shunned. They're told it was their mistake, their fault, their problem, you know. So it's the media and lawmakers just really dismiss. I mean, I've brought plenty of survivors to state hearings to testify, and it's kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm sorry that happened to you, you know, but, well, it won't happen in our state because we have this perfect law that's written so that everybody's protected. And that gets us back to the whole abolitionist, you know, do you regulate commercial surrogacy, or do you work to abolish it? Do you regulate prostitution, or do you work to abolish it, you know?
Well, we can't, you know, one of the mantras that we kept repeating in Albany is, you cannot legislate harm. You just cannot. You know, it would be, just to go back to the slavery analogy, would be like saying, well, if we put air conditioning in the slave cabins, or if we entered into agreements with the slave owners that they would only whip but so many times a day or a week or a month, then the conditions of slavery would be alleviated. That's a harm reduction, you know, policy. And no, the institution, the underlying institution, remains the same. And so what commercial surrogacy and the sex trade have in common is that they are institutions, profitable institutions, that are often overlooked because the victims are women. And we know that women, by and large, are still not quite considered as full human beings in our society. If that were the case, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Exactly. I mean, how many times do you open up your Facebook or Twitter account to find out, you know, some country has now allowed women to drive cars or go to school? Mm-hmm. Things that we here in the U.S. really just take for granted sometimes, that we don't realize, if we look at our global sisters, how much they still struggle. Well, you guys have your hands full for all these issues that you work on. What's the best way for our listeners to find you, to follow? I know you're active on social media. Do you prefer people to follow you on your website or on Facebook or on Twitter?
Twitter and Facebook are always great. People, if you have any questions or would like to be involved, you can contact us at info@catwinternational.org. That's catwinternational.org. If you live in a state where commercial surrogacy is not legalized, please make sure that it doesn't get legalized. And if you are in a state that has legalized commercial surrogacy, then, you know, laws can always be overturned. And what I would encourage people to do is gather stories. There is nothing more powerful than storytelling, especially from a survivor's perspective. And we have just such a dearth of information as to the consequences and pain that commercial surrogacy imparts on human beings and their families.
And I would encourage our listeners to go, of course, to your website where they can financially support your work, because I know as somebody who runs a nonprofit, it takes big gifts, little gifts, monthly gifts, regular gifts, and, you know, fighting big fertility in this big, you know, industry, whether it be prostitution or pornography or the reproductive industry, you know, they have a lot more money than groups like Coalition Against Trafficking in Women.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I'm the worst fundraiser in the world, so thank you for that plug.
Well, just so you know, as soon as we get off the phone, I'm going to go right to your website and make a donation.
Well, thank you so much.
No. Anyway, it's been delightful to chat with you, and thank you for being with us. And I really do encourage our listeners to follow you and to support your good work.
Thank you, and thank you for all you do for women and girls.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising with Jennifer and Cicely. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.